From KCRW in Santa Monica, this is The Treatment.
Welcome to The Treatment, which you can also hear at KCRW.com. My guest, director Spencer Susser, has an interesting way of making movies, taking moments of extreme emotional violence and finding the physical, literal corollary to those. He's done those in such shorts as Love Hurts and an incredible piece called I Love Mary Jane.
Sarah Jane.
Sarah Jane. I'm thinking of Rick James, of course. And his feature film debut, in which he incorporates all this, is Hesher, which was quite a sensation at the 2010 Sundance Film Festival, is getting released now. Thanks so much for being here, first of all.
Thanks for having me. It's pretty exciting.
Well, I'm excited, too, because the shorts are both really funny and almost about the kind of emotional violence that occurs in intimate moments, and then finding a physical version of that. And that's an interesting kind of theme to play out, because in Hesher, which I'll ask you to explain in a moment, it's almost like he's being conjured out of this incredible despair this family's feeling over the death of a loved one.
Yeah. I hate films that spoon-feed the audience and really sort of over-explain things, so I think I tend to try to disguise the emotion in physical action at times. I mean, even with Hesher, you know, it's about a young boy dealing with the loss. That's really what the movie's about. And then there's this kind of crazy character, Hesher, who comes into this family's lives and kind of helps them do it in a weird way. But there's a lot of ways to look at Hesher, you know, like one is he's this complicated character that is just kind of a messed up guy, but he also represents a lot of different things. And so, you know, I guess I think the art that I like, sort of, you bring your life experience to it, you know. For me, this song means this or that, you know. We all live in a yellow submarine. Like, the hell is that about? I don't know, it probably means something.
But Hesher is almost like a metalhead version of Beetlejuice.
That's funny. I haven't heard that. I like that. I've heard Mary Poppins.
Well, we try to do things a little bit differently around here. But Joseph Gordon-Levitt is the Hesher of the title, and he is basically almost so much all id that you kind of wonder if he's a real person or not.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was really important that he was really grounded in that everything he does in the film is motivated. But, you know, he has a lot of non sequiturs. He seems very random at times. But, you know, there's almost everything he says and does has a double meaning. And it's really how you sort of look at the film. And it's kind of funny because I think it's one of those films that people either are going to love or hate. You know, I don't think there's too many people that are going to go, yeah, it was okay. I think the worst thing to hear about something you make is, yeah, I saw that film you made and it was okay. It's like, oh. I don't mind if you hate it with a passion or love it, you know, but there's a lot of ways to look at that guy. Like, it was so important to make him a real character, even though at times it feels a little bit like a fairy tale. But, you know, you think about Mary Poppins, it's like she literally comes out of the sky on an umbrella, and you're like, you just don't think about that. Once she's there, she's there. But, you know, I think the other way to look at Hesher is that, you know, maybe he represents death, you know? Here's his terrible, scary thing that shows up at this family's door.
And as we should say to this family, which includes Rainn Wilson, is sodden with misery. I mean, there's just no way out of it. And Hesher really is like this wind, this hot metal wind that blows into their lives.
And mixes it up, I guess. Yeah, and, you know, there's also Piper Laurie, who plays the grandmother. And it's basically, you know, the boy has lost his mom, and his dad and him move into his mother's house, you know, because he can't function, the dad. And he's sort of numbed himself by taking prescription pills, and it's weird. I think sometimes with loss, you know, I think adults shut down, and I don't know if it's a way of coping. I guess that's what it is. But kids are so malleable. Like, they're forced to deal with whatever they're given. And so they kind of just have to keep living, and they go, this, and it's terrible. And but yeah, that house is, it's not a fun place to be. And and Hesher shows up, like the idea of death perhaps, and moves in. And once they kind of learn how to function with him, in a sense, he goes away. So maybe he's that, but also he also represents life and living life. He's a guy that doesn't worry about yesterday or tomorrow. He's very much in the moment. He does what he wants, and so, you know, it's funny, actually, at Sundance, somebody had said in one of the Q&As, they said, Hester's Jesus, right? And I was like, it was funny because the whole audience laughed. They were like, what? Jesus doesn't talk like that. Or what are you talking about? And no, but it was funny. And they started to draw a lot of kind of parallels. And, you know, he's whatever you want him to be. But for me, he, in order to make the film, he had to be a real person. And he had a complicated backstory that was really rich with detail, which is why I think, you know, it helped us make his performance and honest. And so...
It's the treatment. I'm talking to the director of the new film, Hesher, Spencer Susser. You can also hear the show at KCRW.com. I just find, in looking at the short films, I mean, this could, in a lot of ways, I Love Sarah Jane is almost like a rehearsal for that, even though it's a zombie film. Mm-hmm. I mean, the older kid who's torturing the zombie in the yard could be Hesher. The boy could be the boy in the film. And the Mia Wasikowska could basically be Natalie Portman.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, it's funny because I actually made Sarah Jane when I was in the middle of writing Hesher.
Oh. Well, just tell the audience, if you could, briefly what Sarah Jane's about.
So I Love Sarah Jane is a short film that I made that was, it's basically a love story that takes place during a zombie apocalypse. But, you know, part of the idea is that, you know, like when we're blinded by love, you think about that one person all the time. It's sort of like no matter what happens in the world, you don't notice it. You're just thinking about this one thing. Sarah Jane was originally an idea that I had for a feature.
Oh.
And I felt like the best way... I don't think I'm a great salesman, you know?
How do you mean?
Like, I don't... Getting into a room with a bunch of studio executives and going, here's my idea, and this is how I want to do it, and them going, oh, great, here's a lot of money. Good luck. I just can't see that happening. And I felt like the best way to do that is to show them.
Well, how did that happen with Hesher? How'd you end up going out to find the money to do that?
Well... I didn't really think about any of that stuff. I just wanted to make a movie. And I didn't realize how hard it was to make a movie. I mean, it's really a miracle that any movie gets made, especially independent films. It's, how do you do it? I still don't
know. Well, you did it. So that's why I'm asking you this. It's not an abstract. You made an independent film. How did you end up getting this done? Because I wonder how all these different tones that Hesher contains, how people read that on the page and pick that up. Because it's got to be really tough, isn't it?
I was really lucky, I think. You know, when I was writing, I had Natalie in mind, Natalie Portman, to play one of the roles, and she was the first person I sent the script to. I mean, I didn't send the script out for a really long time. I had been working on it for ages, but anyway, finally, when I did feel like it was worth reading, I sent it to Natalie because I thought she'd be great, and the next day we got on the phone and talked about it, and she signed on to be in the film and to produce it. She really loved the script, and I also sent her the short I had made.
Which short did you send?
Sarah Jane.
Okay, I thought maybe you sent her Love Hurts.
Oh. I probably should have.
By the way, it's the treatment. My guest, who made terrific shorts and a great feature debut, Hesher, is Spencer Susser. You're asking a lot of somebody in that title role.
I mean,
somebody who's got to basically not mind being incredibly unlikable, but also really sort of convinced of his own charm.
Yeah. Well, and it was weird. That was when I was writing, I could not imagine an actor whose name I knew playing Hesher. Like, I just couldn't go, you know, I just wanted, it was super detailed. Like, it was so specific the way this guy was going to be. And like you said, he's not necessarily likable at first, or definitely not on the surface, but he has to be so charismatic that at some point you got to sort of be fighting for him or with him. And it was a hard thing to find, you know. And when I started to cast the film, you know, I in a weird way I had an embarrassment of riches. Like, I had these incredible actors that were kind of putting their hand up to play the role, and I had a funny auditioning process, which was, I wanted the actors to audition me kind of just as much as I was auditioning them. You know, in a way, to go, like, I knew that I needed someone's trust and really faith in me. And so I wanted to just kind of, you know, get in a room and try it. First, you know, you work on a script for a long time. Some actor reads it. A couple days later, they go, here's my take on it. And you're like, that's really cool, but not really. It's not what I know. There's so much more detail in it than that. So I felt like it was important to really give people a chance. And I guess, you know, I'm saying all this because when I met Joe, we sat down, had a coffee, and I was like, he's such a nice guy, and he's the opposite of Hesher. There's just no way this guy's Hesher. And then when we actually started to get in the room and to play with it, I realized that the guy is a chameleon. Like, he just is able to turn into another person. And I think once, you know, I earned his trust and we started to actually work together, it was this really healthy kind of collaboration. And I feel like the performance, it's really loose and raw, but it's also extremely technical, you know, and it's really like, we didn't...
Because there's nothing frantic about it, which from hearing us describe, people think that he's all over the place, but it's really not. Though it's very energetic and brash, it's very contained.
Yeah, and he's calm. Like, Hesher, you know, like I was saying before, he's very in the moment. Like, he's not worried about tomorrow, and he has nothing to lose, you know? He doesn't care if he lives or if he dies, and there's nothing probably more scary than someone with nothing to lose.
There's also something hypnotic about that, too.
It's kind of cool. I'd say sometimes he's like a monk, you know? He's just so at peace in a way. He's just okay with the universe. But he's also a child. He likes chaos. He likes fire. He likes... He kind of creates this... Like, he just shakes things up because it's fun to watch. It's more fun than not, you know?
I wonder, is Sarah Jane going to be found online?
Yeah. It is.
Because if you look at me, just that opening shot of that sort of chaos in this post-zombie world, that could be Hesher's house.
That's the inside of his head.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's on the Blue Tongue site. There's a YouTube channel for Blue Tongue, but it's on there. Like, to go a little bit further into sort of Hesher's backstory, I guess, and why he's that way is, my feeling is, you know, part of his backstory was based on someone that I had known, you know, growing up.
So it must have been like this horror. I can just imagine what the real-life version of Hesher would be.
Well, this is just sort of, it's kind of like I took my friend's story and sort of went with it. And he was, you know, he had a troubled, you know, at home his parents were just not looking after him. Eventually he went to live with his grandmother, who was kind of an angry old lady, like, she did not want to be looking after her kind of troubled teenage grandson. And they hated each other. And it was weird. I'd go over there and it was nothing that made sense to me. It was the opposite of what my house was like.
Wow.
And eventually she died. And he had nobody. You know, here's this 13-year-old kid with nobody. And, you know, it doesn't feel good to be rejected by anybody, let alone your family. So that's kind of where I started with the character and went, okay, what happens to somebody like that? Well, he's put up these walls to protect himself from being hurt. And so he's kind of become a proper loner. So that's kind of who that guy is. But he's like a really innocent child in a way with this very tough exterior. But if you could kind of get past that, he's got a huge heart and he really means well.
Oh, see, you've just done a great job of describing this film. We need to take a break. My guest is director Spencer Saucer. His first feature film is Hesher, which played at last year's Sundance Film Festival, and is now on release. It's The Treatment. There's more to come.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment, which you can also hear at kcrw.com. I'm talking to the director and co-writer of the feature film Hesher, Spencer Saucer. We were talking before the break about what Hesher is, but you also mentioned Blue Tongue, which is this production group you're a part of with Joel and Nash Edgerton. And there's an interesting kind of ethos that plays in the films all you guys have made, which include Animal Kingdom, which is there's a kind of savagery that's been loosed onto the world. It's interesting, and I just wonder where that energy comes from, just sort of like violence and comedy and drama, all but not separated, just all part of this mix. You say you guys don't talk about it, but there is a similarity in,
yeah,
in
I
the
think
films.
We have definitely similar sensibilities, and, you know, like Nash and I... And Joel, actually, we all met working on Star Wars in 2000 in Australia.
Is that where you met Natalie?
That's where I met Natalie, yeah. And, you know, and we just sort of became friends. And, like, I made a documentary on the making of the film. And Nash was doubling Ewan McGregor doing stunts. And Joel was in the film. And, you know, you're on a film set, like, you kind of hang out a lot. We traveled around the world together, and we just became friends. And at the time, I didn't realize Nash had been making shorts. I had been making shorts and music videos, and we just kind of became friends, and we started to work on each other's films, and we just shared this weird sensibility.
Are they like you in that they didn't go to film school as well?
Nope, they didn't. Yeah, like, Nash and Joel, they were... You know, they were trying to build reels, like Nash for his stunts and Joel for his acting. And so, you know, they just had to make stuff. And then they had to learn how to put it together. And so Nash learned how to edit. And I'm kind of similar in that I used to make these silly movies and skateboard movies, and no one wanted to put them together for me, so I had to learn how to do it.
Well, it's interesting because you talk about the shorts being, well, Sarah Jane, for example, going back to that, being something you had in mind for a feature, but the cutting rhythms are really languid. They're like feature cutting rhythms rather than a short, where you basically establish, you cut to something else. There are long takes and characters wandering in and out in front of the camera. And I wondered if, because that's very much kind of different from music video cutting and commercial cutting.
Well, it's funny, when I started editing commercials, like, gosh, it was in 95 something, and at the time it was like there was this crazy editing technique that everyone was doing, and I was like, I loved it, like one frame edits, and I used to take film and bleach it and cut it up and drag it from the back of the car and transfer it, and had just this crazy energy. I loved that. And at the time it was, I guess it was like the MTV editing, I don't know what they called it, and that went on for so long. It got to the point where a commercial like that would come on, and you just tune out.
It's the sort of thing where when movies are like that, they kind of say you can sort of pay attention selectively because there's so much cutting. It's like nobody cares about establishing any kind of real rhythm where you get to know anybody. And even sort of given that there's a lot of energy in Hesher and a lot of abrasiveness, it's very deliberately told.
Like, I like movies that make you think, you know, and there's a lot of movies that come out now that they're just so watered down. And
also, as you were saying before, over-explain the fact that you never really say what Hesher's origins are.
Yeah, and I just, you know, there's definitely little details in the film that, you know, are those moments that are in movies, but I just try to hide them as much as possible. They're in there, but in other films, they just explain everything. Everything is so on the nose. I also, like probably most people my age, have ADD, you know? So you want to... You're rolling your eyes, I know.
No. You kids with your rock and roll, it's the treatment. My guest is director Spencer Susser. His new film is director is Hesher. But as you were talking about this, though, there's a kind of a key flashback in the film, and you don't do a kind of a quick cut to that at all. I mean, even that's kind of like almost... rhythmically cut to, because usually when there's a flashback, especially the way the flashback is used in this film, there's a dramatic cut to it,
right?
You know, just to sort of like change the rhythm and the tone of the film, but you don't do that there either.
Yeah, it's true, and it's funny, that was a thing. It's like I sort of hate the idea of flashbacks, and I never, in the film, for probably half the film, I don't say what the problem is in terms of what's going on in that household. And I think, you know, like, you just don't have to spell it out. You know something is off.
There's also a thing, too, where basically you've got the kid and... I'm sorry, the young actor's name is Skip.
Oh, Devin Brochu.
And Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Basically, they're living in the moment the way kids do. I mean, everything is happening as it happens, and they're invested in that way. It's almost like they're in a clubhouse together.
Well, they're like brothers, you know? They kind of become brothers in a way. And but, you know, it's funny. Actually, someone had brought up the other day that the film was... similar to The Karate Kid, which might sound weird, but I was thinking about it. It's sort of like when you meet Mr. Miyagi, he's not nice.
No, he tortures him.
He's terrible.
Yeah.
And the kid says, I want to learn how to fight. And he says, okay, paint my fence. What? I want to learn how to fight. Paint my fence. Okay, fine, I'll paint your fence. Okay, the other side. Wax the cars, sand the floor. And he's like, "What? Why are you torturing me? I just want to learn how to fight." And then, you know, he goes, okay, show me, wax the car, and he blocks the punch. And the kid's like, oh, okay.
But that's a fairy tale thing, too, where, you know, the protagonists are tortured in fairy tales.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, and it is. I think it's there's just these different layers to it. It's all how you look at the film. It's funny because Hesher says, you know, he swears a lot. He's aggressive, and he's gross, and he's crass, and he's... But, you know, I think one thing that people should do more often is listen to what people say, not how they say it. You know, what is the intention? What is this person saying? And underneath all that stuff, he really has a good message. And he points out some very simple things that we take for granted every day.
I think also, too, what's fascinating is that just from the pieces of yours I've seen, you tend to be attracted to protagonists who are not particularly inclusive or inviting.
Yeah, well, on the surface, you know, and I think hopefully I really feel like Hesher has just the biggest heart, and he just doesn't know how to use it. He doesn't get to use it very often. And I think that's kind of, you know, in the film, I don't want to spoil it, but, you know, he ends up having a really important relationship, which is probably the most unexpected sort of meeting of two people in a way. And, you know, and it's like when someone doesn't have a chance to love or to use that, they don't, you know, and in a weird way, he's out of practice. Like, he's out of practice caring. He hasn't done it. This guy is so selfish, and everything he does is for himself. And when he gets an opportunity to care about someone and to do something selfless, he does.
It's the treatment. The nice opportunity he's talking about is the film Hesher, which stars Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Natalie Portman, Rainn Wilson, Piper Laurie. I mean, that's quite a cast. And clearly, the script worked on a level that actors wanted to be involved in. I mean, you've got iconic people in this. You know, Piper Laurie was nominated for an Oscar.
For three, yeah.
Yes. And then you got somebody who's since become a big Oscar winner, and, you know, Natalie Portman. And then did you have any sort of sense of being comfortable with the actors right away? Did it take, you talked about wanting to earn Joe's trust. Was it the same thing with everybody else too? You said Natalie came on early, but what about Rainn and Piper?
Absolutely, you know, but the thing is, it's like when you work with people like that, and it's a little bit like driving a Ferrari, I guess. You know, it's like you push on the gas and it really goes. You know, you just got to point it in the right direction.
What were the first conversations like as you were bringing the other actors on? You talked about with Natalie and Joe, but what about with the other actors? I mean, and finding that boy.
It was always about just sort of what the heart of the story, and the film is about loss and dealing with it, and all the characters are lost in a way, and they kind of need to find their way. And it's funny, it's one interesting thing about Natalie's character is I've read in some of these reviews, I know I shouldn't look at them because...
but
people say,
you did.
God, you're so stupid. You can't make Natalie Portman look ugly by giving her glasses. And I'm like, what? What? Why? Because someone wears glasses, they're supposed to be ugly? That's the craziest thing I've ever heard. I mean, you know, and for me, like, you know, her character is very much like she was probably someone who was quite social. And then one day, people went and grew up a little bit, and she went, where did everybody go? And now I have to pay bills and I have to function as an adult. I don't know how to do that. No one taught me how to do that. And, you know, she probably had contact lenses and she can't afford them anymore. And all she wants to do is see. So she wears her glasses that she had when she was in junior high school. They don't fit her. They're old fashioned, but they're...
Which again, though, gets back to that sort of that kids clubhouse thing I was talking about. I mean, really, it's like they're hanging out after school. Almost like this extended after school period. But something else I want to ask you about too is, I wonder if you get this as you've been going around to film festivals. I know you were recently just in Austin for South by Southwest, that you didn't attend film school, that you basically, because when we first met, you told me that you went for more for a production house in Santa Monica and just went from one job to another. And if you feel in the doing of that, rather than studying about that, that you lost something at all?
You learn the technical stuff when you do it. You know, I started editing, and I really learned how to make films through editing. And I still approach the world through editing. Everything I do, the way I direct actors, it's all with this sort of editing hat on.
Really? How does that work?
Well, because ultimately you make a film in the edit, you know, and a performance in a movie is not like a performance
on stage.
Yeah, it's edited. The best actors, they're edited. They need to be. And even if they deliver an incredible performance, which they often do, they still need to be worked into this format, which is, you know, the movie. And so, I don't know, I didn't really study films. I always loved watching movies. You know, but I never learned how to make them, and I never learned how to edit either. Like, for me, it's all about the emotion. Like, that's the only way I know how to do it. I just sort of trust my gut.
It's interesting because I guess I wonder, hearing you talk about this, if you understand now, having done and cut so many things yourself, to not be upset. Because this is a big deal. Your first feature film, when you put together your first cut, your first assembly, what that was like for you emotionally. If you understood that, oh, this needs work, or if you just kind of thought, oh my God, I can't believe what this movie isn't.
I don't know. I don't really believe in an assembly. I also fine cut as I go. And it's not necessarily the fastest way to work, but I don't want to move on until I feel like it works. So, I don't know. And, you know, it's funny because you saw the film at Sundance. It played at Sundance in a very early form. I was cutting, and, like, I also don't edit with music.
Oh.
Because I feel like, you know, you're working on an emotional scene, and you have an emotional piece of music, and you lean on it. You know, and all of a sudden it feels right, and then you take the music out, and you're like, this doesn't work. So I feel like if you can make the emotion work without music, when you add the music, it should just elevate it. So when it played at Sundance, it didn't have any, like, no score in the film. It was really, really raw. Like, we had a screening the other day. I think it was almost 500 people. And one thing about the tonal shifts in the film, it's like, it's so nice to have a bunch of people laugh, and then a second later, you could hear a pin drop in there. And then I go, you know what? It doesn't really matter what a critic says about the film. It's just someone's opinion. But when I'm in the room watching the film play, I go, okay, people are in it. And I like that. For me, that feels nice.
Well, we're out of time. Thanks so much for being here, Spencer. Really, I really like the film a lot, and it's great to have you here.
Oh, well, thanks so much for having me.
My guest is director Spencer Susser. His feature film debut as director is Hesher. My recording engineer at NPR West is Marcia Caldwell. The show is mixed by J.C. Swadek. It is edited and produced by Gemma Dempsey. See, somebody edits this too. I'm Elvis Mitchell. I'm being cut away. It's The Treatment.
An audio archive of this and other programs can be found at kcrw.com. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.